Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
Hello, everybody. I can't believe we are already in the month of October. What a fast year. I hope it's been a pleasant, fast year for you, if it's fast at all. But certainly for me, it just seems like it was just a few weeks ago that we were celebrating Easter or Christmas. And here we are about to head into October. We are at year's end. I hope you've paid attention to some of the things that we have told you to pay attention to this year. And I'm speaking specifically to being financial fit, being financially fit, and the importance of that. Having a survival fund, having an emergency fund, saving 5% of everything you make, not spending more than you make. You know the routine. You know those things that you do wrong, that you're not showing a discipline. Show a discipline, because as we get to the end of the year, and by the way, I hope you have put away that that Christmas savings that we talked about early on, a little bit aside, so that when you come down to the month of December, you have some dollars that you can kind of rally around and play with, and not touch your income or your other savings. Okay, I hope you're doing that. It's a pleasure to have you here with us today. We're going to talk about the state of America. I say it humbly, but because we all are influenced by our leaders, our national leaders, our president, what he says, how he says it, it makes a difference in terms of our family. Do you feel safe? Do you feel like, hey, I can invest, or things are going to be okay? I looked at the market a couple of days ago, up 100 and some odd points. So is that an indication that we are comfortable with the words that our president speaks and that our other leaders or not? Those are the kinds of things I want to get into. And then, of course, we have to visit Vegas, Las Vegas, and the loss of 59 people. Just in terms of what it does to you, do you feel safe that way? So we have lots to talk about, and we have the person who can certainly guide us, and that's Dr. Lisa Van Susteren. Dr. Lisa Van Susteren is a forensic psychiatrist. And you know what? I could tell you, go to Google. And just look at her bio. It is fascinating, the things that she has done, the things she is doing. She is a practicing psychiatrist, by the way, and has done our show many, many times. And she's been a part of my broadcast life for the past 15 to 20 years. And we're very pleased to have her with us this morning. We're going to spend some time with her. After Lisa is finished and we talk to her, we're then going to go talk with Stan Corey. You may remember he joined us a few months ago. When he wrote a book, and he's written a new book. The book is about retirement, retirement stages, go-go to no-go. So he'll be here for a couple of segments at the end of our conversation with Lisa Van Susteren. Let me welcome her to the show. Lisa, always a pleasure to have you on the program, Doctor.
Oh, it's always fun to be with you, Paul.
Thank you so much. I'm trying to imagine what's happening to you in terms of your daily practice. Are people coming in with their same concerns, or has that concern gone to being more upset, if that's the right word, or at least concerned about what's going on a national scene? Any difference?
Yeah. The thing is, everybody's got the regular default set of concerns. But they're sort of on steroids right now because people feel uneasy about the future. We have a lot of forces, and we're not always conscious of the things that are bothering us. Sure, we know that Vegas is pulling us all in pain as we identify with all of the sadness. But we've had three major storms, and we know that scientists are telling us it's from climate change, and they're warning us. And we see the impacts of that. We also, let's face it, have a political situation that's like a warring family. It's like a mother and a father who are constantly fighting and can't get it together to make a stable home where there's an obvious building for the future with harmony and with maybe disagreements, but we know how to work them out. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we're confronting right now.
You know, usually, and I think this is part of the difference, at least from what I from my vantage point, we look toward our leadership. In this case, we're talking about President Trump to be the person that soothes the wild beast, who reaches out and says things in a way that tend to temper down and settle people down and make them feel better. That is not his style. I don't fault him for his style. It's his style. We elected a person who has this particular style. But the question is, does this style play into the confusion or into the uncertainty that people feel?
Well, in my opinion, it absolutely does, because I always use the model of the family. You have a parent, for example, who is steady and who seems to embrace values that are time-honored, that bring out the best in other people, and that look for the good in order to amp that up and try to resolve conflict, and would never use words that are divisive or insulting because they can be damaging. And nobody's that perfect parent. But what happens is that if you have someone who is intemperate and does say what he or she thinks all the time when he or she feels like it and isn't careful about the feelings and the nuances, then there are going to be ripple effects. And I think that one of the things that we do see in a president is that the president is almost like a parent, whether we like it or not. And we may not like it, but that is unconsciously what it feels like. So this is the person that is establishing the family, the values of the family. And this can be very, very disturbing, especially for people who are sensitive to these things.
My guest is Dr. Lisa Van Susteren, a forensic psychiatrist practicing psychiatry in the greater Washington area, and who has a wealth of experience and joins us from time to time to talk about how we feel and why we feel like we do. When we come back, we'll talk more with Dr. Lisa about where we're headed and what we can do about it. Stay with us.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry.
Family is so important to structure to what we do, Dr. Lisa, as you well know. I've heard some very interesting comments. For instance, following what happened in Vegas, and we were talking with a number of folks there, and they were saying this. They were saying that Vegas would not have happened, but that the president has given a new attitude, to folks. In other words, they're not saying that they're not blaming the president for what happened in Vegas, but they're saying the atmosphere that he creates is one that is conducive to saying to someone like this deranged man, it's okay to do what you do. You buy that?
No. You can't attribute a cultural norm, which is that we have access to guns and people use them, to a single person. What we do collectively is what creates the atmosphere. And so I think it would be unwise always to attribute any particular act to any particular person. What we do can help or it can hinder the discussion. And while I'm not going to say that the president is helping, because I personally don't believe that, because I believe that if you have a culture of guns, it suggests that's the way to resolve conflict. In countries where you have fewer guns, for example, America has 25 times more gun homicides than all the rest of the countries of the same income, so 25 times more. And that's because that's the culture. And we have to look inward, and all of us figure out what ways we can be involved in this discussion. And a lot of us are really frustrated. Well, in 2018, we better be out there either running or supporting candidates who make gun safety a priority. So that's what we can do. I don't think blaming one person is effective.
What about the feud, the Republican-Democrat break, this continuous feud. What impact does that have on the family, on how we feel about how safe we are and how strong we are as a country?
It's very, very problematic. It's not just because it's an atmosphere of division, but what happens is it turns people off to the process. So rather than thinking of ways to more deeply invest themselves in a democracy, and a democracy requires all hands on deck. This is not a default form of government. A democracy requires us to be out there voting, taking charge, supporting, discussing the issues. But when you think, oh, these guys are all a bunch of rum-dums just fighting and they're on the take with lobbyists because we don't have campaign finance reform laws or we have gerrymandering that artificially selects candidates, people are turned off. So we have some fundamental things that we're looking at our Supreme Court and our leaders to resolve so that people who are in the community can feel that their efforts are worthwhile and that their vote counts.
And what do we say to our children who hear these things as families? And of course, much of my audience is made up of young families with new children, with new babies or young children.
You got to tell them you don't agree with the process, and you got to say, you know, it's a saying, if you don't like the news, go out and make your own. So the point is that urging them to be involved in their schools, there are offices they can run for in their schools. There are events that they can help pick up littering or plant gardens. There are all sorts of ways that you can show them that the lives that they want to lead, the values that they embrace, are in their hands. And collectively, if we're each doing the right thing, we got what we need and what we want. We can tell them this. It's true. Don't lie to them. It's not a good time. People are very much on edge in our country right now. And to suggest that that's not true makes them disbelieve it. They won't trust you. But tell them it's in their hands collectively. Individually, we go out and vote. And the collective, we've got a democratic form of government.
My guest is Dr. Lisa Van Susteren. Look, we're not going to solve gun problem here. We're not going to solve the political problem. But what we are going to do is let you know it's okay to discuss them without pointing fingers, without blaming, but saying, here's what we have. And how do I get through the day with my family? And do I save now? Can I feel safe? What do I tell my kids? We'll be back with more. Stay with us. Listening to Home and Family Finance, I am your host, Paul Berry, here on the Radio America Network. We are so pleased to be with you today. My guest is Dr. Lisa Van Susteren. She is a practicing psychiatrist, folks, and she costs you nothing but some time because she's willing to come on the program and talk to you and say, okay, yeah, I'm in this with you. And folks, that's what this is about today. I have a radio show. I talk to people across this country. I can't just let what's happened happen and not say to you, I think you ought to be thinking about this, or it's okay, or here's what we ought to do, or at least give you some guidance, but professional guidance from someone with the experience of Lisa Van Susteren. Lisa, thank you so much for being with us. It's so important.
Thank you. I want to say to your listeners that I really appreciate this opportunity to speak to them, and that if a dialogue would obviously be better, but just not possible.
Yeah. That's exactly right. So I try to ask the questions or at least frame the situation that I think I feel for my family, and I suspect a lot of you feel the same way. And so the issue is, and this is very unfair, Lisa, but where are we headed?
Well, you know, that's the big question, isn't it? I think we have to assume, and of course they always say hope without an action plan is a fantasy, but I think that we should be hopeful, because I think that if we pick up on the positive, and it's not always easy to pick up on the positive. They always say you have to have three times more positive to outweigh the negative, but it's really imperative we know that our health depends on it, and some of the positive is just being able to take a moment to go outside and enjoy the majesty of nature and to get excited about the things that are more enduring. Whatever's happening on the national stage politically today is going to be different tomorrow or down the road, and we have to remember that ultimately it's what we do collectively that determines our future. So each contribution that we make is really important. Now, that said, I just want to say, and you can ask me something about empathy and maybe listening to other people, because that's really one of the issues that I see is really tough. Maybe I'll just go off on that, because I have found that when I have very strong political views and views about other things, whether I'm right or not, I'm not going to say, but when I hear, yesterday I was with a law enforcement guy, and when I heard his side of the story, boy, does that change. And we don't always have the opportunity to hear what it's like to walk on somebody else's feet. Mm-hmm. But empathy is really going to be the key, listening to other people so that we can have empathy, so that we can work out our differences.
But, Doc, the fact of the matter is we don't have that example at the very top. This is probably the least president with the least empathy of anybody that's ever been elected, at least in recent times. He's not an empathetic man. He said things that made me cringe to these folks on the island of Puerto Rico.
Okay.
What do I do? Do I stand up and say, okay, I hear you, and I'm not going to let it bother me, or it bothers me, and it's okay? Where do I come down here?
All of the above. Obviously, I think most people, or a lot of people, cringed. But there is such a thing as, if we keep our eyes open and our ears open, as learning from other people's mistakes. So if we find that he isn't empathic, if we find that he isn't trying to put himself in other people's shoes, one of the things we can do is think to ourselves about what we can do to make it different. And we all have these, I'm going to say on that order of magnitude, but we all have places where we can collectively contribute. And I believe in the political process. I believe in democracy, and I believe that there's a reason why this person got elected. And it isn't necessarily him. It's that there are parts of our country that are suffering and struggling, and they feel they're not being heard, and they feel that this is a style, potentially, that will enable their voices to be heard. So what can we do to bring them back into the conversation in a way that's uplifting, that is edifying, that builds positive infrastructure for the future rather than a destructive or insulting force? So that's what I say. We're not going to get that's it. We can't drown out people who are in pain and people who are angry. And I think that he represents a certain segment of the population feels it hasn't been heard.
And I think he feels that way as well. I don't think this person is a bad person or a mean-spirited person. I think he looks at the situation in the country that he leads and says, okay, there's got to be balance, and we've lost our balance. And I think to some degree that may be true, and maybe what he's really trying to do ultimately is to balance us in a way that we can survive in the future that you talk about.
Yeah, the smart thing, though, if you're a politician, you know that packaging is exceedingly important.
Yeah.
And the whole question is, in all of these things, what's the best way to make our argument or espouse our values and get other people in with us?
Let me take a break. We'll be right back. My guest is Lisa Van Susteren, a practicing psychiatrist, and I hope you're listening. We'll be right back.
Safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
My guest is Dr. Lisa Van Susteren, a practicing psychiatrist who is talking about how we, me, you, and everyone else in this country should feel or can feel or will feel because of what we are experiencing. And a lot of this we are experiencing from our leader, from the man who was elected and that you voted for or you didn't. But in America, he who gets the most votes, takes the position, or she, and that is Donald Trump. You've listened to him, and I've asked you several times before, and you said, he's not someone that I study as a doctor, or at least I don't know. And so in my profession, I can only go so far. How far can you go in terms of what you think of Donald Trump?
far can I go personally?
Yes.
Well, I've gone pretty far in private conversations, and I have bumped up against in public what's called the Goldwater Rule, which psychiatrists forbid psychiatrists to talk about people that they haven't personally examined. And there's some benefit to that because you don't want people who don't know what they're talking about out there speculating. But here's what I can say, and I won't speak about him specifically, but what I will say is that people who have a certain, we all have a temperament style, and we all have a cognitive functioning style, in other words, the way our brains work, and those are genetically founded. They're based on our DNA. And with people who are insulting and who have a style that is divisive, and with people who have problems, it seems, at times with stringing sentences together that follow one after the other, or even have a lot of content in them, sometimes you find that there are some unexplained or undiagnosed cognitive disorders. And while I'm not saying that about the president, because I've never examined the president, I have seen things in other people that make me think that there are, again, in other people, that there are problems with mental functioning that involve some aspects of very refined intellectual activities, such as, again, word retrieval, content of intellectual texture, sequencing of sentences. You can find this sometimes in people who have learning disabilities. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not to impugn anybody, but it does mean that sometimes people handle that in a way that can, rather than just admitting it and working with it, they get very defensive. And they get very angry, and what you see is their reaction to some of their own difficulties. So I'm not saying that about him. I've never examined him. I can say that I have seen things like this in others.
Yeah, and we've got 9 months now, or 10 months coming in now, of this president, of watching his behavior. And I guess that's what I'm really suggesting here in terms of your conclusions without understanding you've examined him, but you were able to put together 10 months of behavior that suggests that maybe he has some deficiencies when it comes to patience or accepting criticism.
Yes, and let me say to my psychiatrist colleagues that most people don't need a psychiatrist to have an opinion about Donald Trump's style. So we're really a little bit grandiose to think we got to use fancy terms and all the rest. Everybody gets it.
The guy's nuts.
We've been out there in the community. We get it. No fancy degrees needed.
Well, I've got people that say he's nuts. I said, you know what? I don't know what he is. I know that he's the president, and I know that I have respect for the office, and I want to have respect for him. But when he does things like throwing paper towels at people or comparing disasters, you wonder. You know, it's like I can't be wrong. I've got to be right, and I think that's one of the things that bothers me most about him is that it's okay sometimes to be criticized and be wrong.
Well, of course, and anybody who has been in the workplace with contemporaries, with people who are they work with, understand that if they're not the boss, they got to deal with people. But if you've always been in a rarefied atmosphere where you've been able to fire people at will, you don't learn as well as you do when you have to struggle with your shortcomings. In the usual marketplace of the world, you got to fix your shortcomings or you're going to get into trouble. But if your shortcomings have worked to your advantage because you've had a lot of money, well, that can be a problem. Yeah. Or a lot of power. That can be a problem.
Yeah.
You don't learn. And I think that it's very disheartening for us as a country when we're hurting, which we are, especially after Vegas and all these storms. We really need somebody who has a kindly, comforting demeanor, who feels warmth towards us and for whom we can feel warmth towards, because that's the healing process. That's the harmony that brings a healing process. You can't heal in a divisive atmosphere.
Well, you know, Dr. Lisa Van Susteren, I just thank you so much for being here. Look, let me just say what I know about you, that you are one of the most patriotic Americans I've ever met, and one of those people that is so willing to be out there And you're out there in so many ways. You've actually run for office. You have companies. You've done so many great things. You're the mother of children. And the reason I'm saying this, folks, is I don't want anybody at home sitting there saying, oh, she doesn't. It's not about liking. This is about truth. It's about how we raise our families. I'm a Vietnam veteran. Nothing I love more than my country. And nothing I like more than you, my audience. I want you to hear and to think. And the whole idea here is for you to put some thought to this. You know,
absolutely.
It's okay. And so in the final analysis, doctor, I guess the point I'm at, the diagnosis is that we're going to survive. And to us, what do you say to us, those of us who are dealing with this on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I guess the thing to say is that we have to count the blessings that we do have and to look at the larger picture, which is this is the safest, best country in, I mean, for me, it's a country that I love.
Yeah.
And I appreciate there's a lot of division, sure, but it's an exciting place to live. Mm-hmm. It's a young country full of possibility still. And I think that looking at that good side and then recognizing that at a certain point, it's up to us to be in the driver's seat steering this, whether it's locally by becoming active or whether we're involved in national issues, but caring and showing that the issues are important to us and bringing that to our kids who are going to inherit this country.
Dr. Lisa Van Susteren, thank you so much for taking time. I know how busy you are, and I know some patients sitting right now waiting to talk to you. Thank you for talking to us, and come back and see us again soon, would you?
Thank you, Paul.
Okay. What a pleasure. God bless you. Coming up next, we're going to talk about retirement. Your retirement. Stay with us.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry.
And I'm very pleased to be back here now with another gentleman who's been with us before, Stan Corey. He's a certified financial planner. He is an author. He is managing director of United Capital Financial. You know, if you decide, folks, to do some serious investing, and even before you get to the serious side, let me start out by saying this. You need somebody like Stan to help you. You wouldn't go into a doctor if you were doing if you had a real problem and say, look, let me tell you what I'm doing. You're going to go in and say, please tell me what to do here and what direction should I take. And I think that's where you'd find Stan. So you can reach out to him. But we're here today to talk about a second book. This one is called Retirement Stages, Go-Go or No-Go. Stan, what are you talking about here? What's going on?
Well, what I've been dealing with for almost 40 years is working with clients getting to a point where they want to retire. And a lot of the information that's out there is designed to show people through various and sundry software programs that the dials look good, that you're going to be able to retire, mm-hmm. things fine, or whatever you need to do. But what I've also discovered is that there's very little available to people for how do you deal with living in retirement. Mm-hmm. It's not about just getting to retirement. That's sort of, you know, the beginning of the second game of your life, sort of. You need to now understand all the different things that may be coming your way, from just simple things like selecting how to time Social Security or knowing about Medicare and how Medicare works and the things that are required as far as do you, when you have to sign up for Part A when you're 65, but if you fail to sign up for Part D at the right time, you could end up having a penalty that's mm-hmm. affecting the rest of your life. So things like that are important, as well as how do you develop distribution planning. But one of the key areas I found in my research was that the biggest challenge many people face is the actual transition into retirement. So what I've written about is how people deal with the transition, and then you go through what I call the different stages beyond that are go-go stages, which means it's when you're in your most best health and you're traveling maybe and you're doing the things you enjoy doing, living independently, all those fun things, until such time as you find that circumstances start slowing you down. So you get into more of a slow-go period. You may still be driving and living independently, but your environment starts to shrink a little
yeah.
bit.
And a lot of this, too.
That kind of stuff.
And a lot of this can go back, and let me get that on the table right now. A lot of what happens goes into a lack of planning, early on in your life. Because if you start planning early to retire, and I'm, by the way, millennials, I'm talking to you, anybody over 21 years old, you ought to be right now starting to plan for your retirement. It happens. You don't have to wait till you're 50, 60, or 70 to retire. If you do it properly, and if you want to do it, you can. And that's the truth. And lots of young people are retiring at 45 or 50 years old, aren't they?
Yes, and that's why I talk about stages is not based on ages, because there are people that retire in the 50s as well as people who retire in the 70s. But what you just said is critical. I've coached a lot of young people. That we do a lot of multi-generational things, and so when people get out of college, one of the first things I tell them is to take it, you know, at least – you know, if you get a job, is participate in a 401k, even if it's 1 or 2% or whatever, try to get to the amount, if there's a match that you're maximizing the match the company may be giving you. Mm-hmm. Start with something, but, you know, it's one of the old things I remember, if you could, an illustration of saying something a little crazy, but if an 18-year-old could you convince them to do anything, but if you got to save $1 a day at 18 for the rent till they were 65, and it got put in a growth thing that averaged, you know, 10% a year return, over their time, they would have put away only about $20,000 in total, but it would be worth about $1.5 million.
Amazing.
Age 65.
Right.
And that's just the eighth wonder of the world is compound return. So the sooner you start, the easier. And so I totally agree with what you just said there, Paul. And what I find is that people in their 20s, it's hard because they're living paycheck to paycheck many times. So just trying to save first and spend what's left over is really the ideal way. If you try to save what's left over, you won't. So you always got to put something away ahead of time and then live on what you have left over.
It makes so much sense for us. Yeah, it makes so much. And Stan and folks like him who have and by the way, make sure if you're going to reach out to somebody, make sure that they are certified, licensed to help you with your money. There's a whole lot of shade tree planners out there that haven't saved a dime, but will certainly take some of your money and try to save and live on it. Folks, I am in a living example of what happens when you don't do what you're supposed to do. It is scary to get out here, and then all of a sudden you realize, I don't have a lot of time, or at least I didn't think I did. But it pays to talk to someone who knows, it's never too late. It is never too late to better your situation. You may not have as much money as you thought you wanted to retire on, but you'll have some money if you start working and start right now, wherever you are, whether you're 20, 30, 40, or 50, or even 60. There, you just got to do this and get it right. Or at least try to make it right and try to correct what you didn't do before. Stan talks about in his book, when does your book come out, by the way?
We're hoping it will be out in January.
In January? Okay.
Yes.
So we're a couple of months away from you getting it finished and getting it published and all the bells and whistles.
Final editing, which, you know, is always a challenge. So hopefully from here we get it into all the things necessary to get it out on the market by January.
Okay. When we come back, I want to talk about the five states or stages, as he talks about, of retirement. I want you to clearly hear those five stages and determine where you are or where you think you might be. All of that straight ahead here on Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, with my guest today, Stan Corey, author, managing director of United Capital Financial Advisors. We'll be right back. Listening to Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. Oh man, what a wonderful day that we've had today talking to you, and I hope you've enjoyed it. Stan Corey here talks about money, honey. It is so important in the five stages, retirement stages. It's a new book coming out in January. Stan, explain the five stages, which as quickly as you can.
The transition stage is really kind of fascinating, is that I'm finding that more of our average people that go out there and work hard, sometimes are hourly or just on low salaries, that they've struggled but make ends meet the best they can. You know, retirement is a big celebration time. They get to the point where they find that they're able to, you know, not have to go to work anymore. They can go out and travel a little bit, maybe get an RV or something, and it's wonderful. And they move into it, I think, more easily sometimes. Where people that have that are maybe a higher executive or professional, they seem to have more trouble retiring in the transition because it's a big identity issue. And somebody that's been, you know, addressed as always being in control of a lot of things, or executives, and I've had them tell me they wake up after retirement and their screen that used to be full of a schedule is all of a sudden blank, and they're kind of lost for a while. So it's very interesting how different people deal with the transition into retirement. But once you get through that, and that can be anything from a month to a year, sometimes it takes. It's amazing how that transformation has to occur to where you get there. And by the way, I define retirement as when work becomes optional. So it's not about age again. It's okay. About, you know, someone has accumulated sufficiently. I've had people who retired in their 50s because they started saving, as you profess all the time, at an early age and have accumulated sufficient assets to where they have enough assets that they can live on and they don't need to work anymore. And they may continue to work or work in a capacity that really that they enjoy.
But do something different,
which is really cool. Right. And they can do something that's really that they most enjoy and they're passionate about. And it's not about earning money then. It's about doing things that are important to them. So once you get through that, you know, into retirement, whatever that age is, but your next stage of go-go means you're, again, you're mobile, you're doing all the things you want. And the slow-go is more of a time where you may still be driving, you're still doing things, but yeah, you're probably seeing a doctor a few more times. You may get that knee replacement or hip replacement, but your environment starts to narrow a bit in your slower go years. Mm-hmm. And you get into the no-go is when, yeah, it gets to that point in time where you are needing more assistance, and you may live in a assisted care, you may not be driving anymore, and you may be doing other things, but you're, you know, again, your environment's changing a little bit, and so you get into that no-go stage where you do need the help, and you are, if you have cognitive issues, you maybe end up in a memory care facility. But a lot of good along the way, what I talk about is the use of how to integrate these things into your lifestyle, into relocating it sometimes, or whether you're going to age in place, stay in your home. Is it set up for that, or do you need to move into a retirement community or continuing care retirement communities where you can live independently, but they'll also have assisted care to memory care to nursing care if necessary. So all of these things. But my goal basically is that we plan to get to retirement, but we need to plan our retirement itself. And so for people that are used to doing this planning, getting to that point, you still want to be in control, because if you don't stay in control of what you want to do in retirement and make plans throughout it, then you're putting that on to someone else to make decisions for you when you become incapacitated or unable to. And my belief is that, you know, why do we want to foster, you know, that responsibility, those making those difficult decisions to someone else, a family member or friend, or sometimes a stranger. So by having planning, as you say, planning is a lifetime thing. Planning in retirement is important to make sure that you're doing the things that you wish to do, that you're getting the most out of your retirement that you can, and that you are setting the stage for yourself of how you want to be taken care of in the event things change for you. And that's the real key.
And the name of the book here is Retirement Stages, Go-Go to No-Go. You hear the stages. Stan takes you through them. His book will be out in January. And folks, it's very simple. Look, the planning is important. You can change. Just because you set up something today doesn't mean that's what you're going to have to do tomorrow. But at least you have something to build on if you've started, okay? And that's about being financially fit. Spend less than you make, okay? Have a survival fund, have an emergency fund, and save 5% of everything you make every day of your life. You'll thank me. You'll say, Paul, what a wonderful guy. You'll even invite me over for dinner, maybe, on you. We'll figure it all out. Al Peterson, thanks so much. Al, our engineer, has been with me for 10 years. No better looking, but, you know, it makes me sound pretty good. And here he comes. Okay, yeah, it's great. Yeah, all right. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. Hope you'll join us. Okay, see ya.